You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Tuesday, the 26th of August, 2025. It's a bit of a long podcast because we've got extended interviews with three CEOs today, including that of Coles, Tyro and Fortescue. And it's on a day where the share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 off by 0.4%. Jamie Hanna from Van Eck will tell us the details. But first, let's go to Coles, which posted a 3.1% increase in underlying full-year profit at $1.18 billion. Supermarket sales up 4.3% over the year at $40 billion. And it said momentum seems to be continuing because sales in the first 8 weeks of this new financial year are up 4.9%. Shares climbed 8.5% today as a result. So for more, I spoke with Coles CEO, Leah Wecker. Leah, so consumers are starting to spend more per transaction at Coles. They're putting more things into their basket, but they're also heading toward your home brand range. Can you give me some insights into how the consumer is feeling at the moment and how that's being reflected in your supermarkets?
Well, we know cost of living is still a significant area of focus for most Australian households, but our recent surveys that we do with customers would indicate that we're seeing the first green shoots of sentiment starting to shift and customers feeling a little bit more confident about their budgets and their spend going forward. And that's starting to translate into some higher sales in the food space. We actually saw the ABS data for June was at over 6% for food spend, which is really quite strong. But what we haven't seen yet is that really translating into a change in behaviour. So the behaviours we've seen over the last couple of years of customers trading into more affordable options, cutting back on items like treats or bottled water or liquor, as well as shopping around at more retailers, those behaviours are persisting for now.
Can we talk about theft and stock loss? It's been an issue for many retailers, like Super Retail, this profit reporting season. Last year, it was a big focus for Coles, and you've invested in technology to combat it. Has it worked? Has theft improved or worsened? And is it more of a problem in certain areas, for example?
So theft and loss for us, if we went back a couple of years ago, was a significant issue. And I think I've discussed it with you on this program before. What we have done over the last couple of years is made significant investments in loss technology. And this rollout into our stores has enabled us to see some really great decreases in the rate of theft that we are seeing, to the point where we're actually now broadly back to where we were in financial year 22, which is a really great result given the market has not improved during this period. Now, that being said, we are still seeing an increase in threatening situations for our team in store, and that is leading to us putting more investment into safety initiatives.
So what kind of safety initiatives?
For many of our team now, we've rolled out increased levels of CCTV in our stores, body-worn cameras, and for many of our team, they've also undergone training in de-escalation techniques so that when they encounter an incident, they're more confident in dealing with it.
Leah Wecker there, the CEO of Coles, who also told me that food price inflation at the supermarket rose 1.5% over the last financial year. From Coles, let's go to Fortescue. Shares in the company down 3.9%. It comes as the miner posted a 41% decline in full-year profit despite record iron ore shipments and amid asset write-downs. It'll also pay a lower total dividend. Now, the CEO of Fortescue says he believes the US will ultimately push ahead with the energy transition and its current stance is short-term, but is having a negative impact on economic impact in the meantime. So to find out what he means by that and more, I spoke with Fortescue Metal and Operations CEO, Dino Otranto. Dino, thanks for your time. First of all, record iron ore shipments, yet revenue and profit are down. What's the operating environment like for Fortescue?
Look, the operating environment is actually really, really strong. I mean, yes, earnings were down based on the year-on-year impacts of iron ore pricing. But look, at about $100, it's a fantastic price for us, and that then flows through with Our profits and our EBITDA results that we announced today on the back of, as you say, really phenomenal production performance and industry-leading cost performance. And on top of that, a safety record, which is really unparalleled in the industry.
An interesting line I saw in the annual report today, and I guess it's talking or relating to the shift to green energy. And granted, it is an Andrew Forrest quote in the report saying that no new industry or transformational shift has ever been linear or easy. We haven't always got it right, but we learn every day from advances and setbacks. What have you learned?
Well, look, our journey has started nearly 10 years ago now. So we've learned a hell of a lot. And it's often reported the downsides and the risks we've taken, but rarely is it reported the upsides. And if I point to the investment we're making on decarbonisation, who would have expected us to be here just a couple of years on with a line of sight, a real line of sight now for real zero for our terrestrial operations in the Pilbara here in WA. Technology has moved at such a fast rate of knots, and some of our investments in early stage technology didn't pay off. But what we've seen is our own investments in other technology grow and really unexpected outcomes for us. And we've applied all that now with partners around the world and their technologically advancements as well into our operations here in Western Australia. And we've put all that together, and now, as I said before, a really good line of sight of real zero by 2030. And just reflect on that moment. And we're an emitter of 2 to 3 million tons of carbon dioxide. We've completely reconfigured the way we operate, and we can do it profitably. And if we can, it's just demonstrable to anyone else out there who thinks it's impossible to give it a go. And I'd encourage everybody, government, our competitors, downstream producers, get on this because it is closer than you think.
You've said in a recent podcast that with what's going on politically, people have an excuse not to take action on climate change, but it's a very short moment in time. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, that comment was really related to what we're seeing in the US at the moment. You've got a president who has made a point of pulling out support on almost active projects that are nearing completion, which really for us is a very uncertain landscape for industrials like us who want to invest in those projects. As I said, they are economic projects. Around the world, we're now seeing costs of solar and wind combined with battery storage outcompete the oil and gas industry. And what people aren't reporting is it's free power once you've made the capital investment. Every day the sun shines, you get those electrons. Even since I made those comments, I said it's a short moment in time. I point to the north of us in China. They are about to eclipse last year's record investment in solar and wind installation, 400 gigawatts. That is a massive investment in this space. So we're really encouraged, really, what we're seeing.
I'm glad you mentioned China because you've applauded the Australian government for recognizing the direction of green iron and those Australia-China opportunities. You were in China with the Prime Minister recently. How's that all progressing, and what's your key message to the government right now?
My key message is keep doing what you're doing. I mean, it was fantastic to be there with our Prime Minister Anthony Albanese at the round table with steel mills and iron ore producers, both heads of state there. Really speaking to the legacy that we come from, a rich history around supplying the raw material, but also acknowledging that the transition is underway in China and the steel industry is moving. And what we are encouraging is that Australia remains at the table for the next generation or three, where we can combine what are, in my view, the next round of resource projects, which is the sun and the wind, combined with the resources we have in the ground. It's an enviable position that I believe no one else on the planet has. You've got the demand there from China. You've got the technology and manufacturing prowess right across the road. And you've got this incumbent resource here in Australia, which we can export to China and the rest of the world. And I certainly believe that it's a short-term view that we have in the US at the moment. And economics will prevail, and an appreciation that the climate is being impacted by what we are doing.
Final three questions. Your release today also highlighted how you're driving productivity through AI and automation. How so?
Yeah, look, I know it's a controversial topic at the moment, but we at Fortescue have always believed that the productivity and the economic returns that our business enjoys has been developed by people applying technology. We were the first to roll out a fully autonomous fleet of vehicles. We've been using AI in our supply chain for now a couple of years already. And our future, you know, I'm very optimistic about this. Will there be a change in certain roles? Yes, we call that out. And most technologies, when they come in, means you need to act and reskill yourself to use that. I'm sure you can recall the first time you picked up the Nokia 5210 or something, and then you've gone to an iPhone or a tablet now. You have to change your skills, and we see certainly that being applied in the AI space. It's enhancing what humans can do, and that's what we've seen in our business already.
Final two questions on diversity. You've made a point of highlighting your inclusive workforce. Women make up 25%. They hold 30% leadership roles, 40% senior leadership. First Nations representation improved to 12% of FMG's Australian workforce. How is diversity helping your business?
I mean, it's absolutely fundamental. And the way we look at diversity is not so much about gender equality or minority representation. It's making sure the people around the table solving the problems come from very different perspectives. The problems we're trying to solve at Fortescue are new problems. They're complex problems. And linear thinking, having six or seven folks from the same school, the same part of the world, who speak the same language or have the same experiences, may not yield a completely different result. And me personally, I think it's the absolute right thing to do. And it's one of the first things I do is make sure that the team around me is diverse from language, from culture, from gender, from experience, from age. And what I've experienced is that you can solve some of the most insurmountable problems by having diverse teams. And then results like we declared today are a natural outcome. So for me, it's an absolute no-brainer. Where we work should represent the communities that we grow up in.
And finally, you migrated from Germany at a very, very young age. You can speak a couple of languages. How has that helped you in business?
Well, I come from Italian and German parents. You're right. I migrated here when I was a young age. I think what my background has given me is a real awareness of the value that different cultures, different ethnicities bring to the table. And you find you're more open to different perspectives, where sometimes you default to maybe a bit of fear of what's different. I think the background that I've had, you weren't forced, but it was a natural part of your day to experience very different cultures, different languages, different skin colours. So as I've grown in the industry, it's really natural for me, and it actually feels foreign when there is no difference, when everybody's the same, having the same conversation. It just feels a bit strange for me. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for diversity, and really applaud the SBS. I've been watching it since I was a little kid, and what you stand for to bring all of the nationalities in Australia, this rich mixing pot that we have, to life. I think you're doing a great job.
That's Dino Otranto there, the CEO of Fortescue Metals and Operations there. We'll return to our CEO interviews in a few moments. We've got Tyro Payments CEO in a few seconds. But first, let's take a look at the Australian share market, because it fell by 0.4% to 8,935 today. That's on the S&P ASX 200. Eight of the 11 sectors were lower today. The worst performing materials, followed by utilities, but the best performing sector by far was consumer staples, and that was because of that Coles Group performance. Shares up by 8.5% today. Also doing well, Boss Energy up by 10.4%, and Nuix up by 17%. The worst performers include Reece, which declined 7.4%, and Imdex down 13.9%. So for more on the day's market action, including a curious and unprecedented move by the US president, I spoke with Jamie Hanna from Van Eck. Jamie, the market's down today. What's driving sentiment?
Look, we've really just taken a lead from what happened in the US overnight. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ pulled back slightly. So there is a lot of news coming out of the US at the moment in general. So it's very difficult to kind of put an exact driver of the markets at the moment through all the noise that's coming through. But essentially, whatever's happening in the US is having a flow-on effect into Australia, and we're seeing the same effect play out again today.
What do you make of the international environment at the moment and the implication for shares? Because we're seeing tariffs making headlines again, impacting Australia Post deliveries to the US, for example. That's just adding to disruptions. Then you've got Donald Trump, the president, sacking a Federal Reserve governor. There's ongoing Middle East tensions, yet shares are at or near a record high, both here and in the US.
Look, there is no doubt that there are risks in the market right now. I think you could quite easily argue a case that the market is a peak. However, the market is rising, and it is, you know, somewhat difficult to go against a rising market. And not to mention, it is then even harder to pick the top of a rising market. So I think arguably in the long run, you have to be positive on the market and its direction. So that means that the market at the moment is obviously on an upward trajectory. The market is already talking about the tariffs. They're talking about the Federal Reserve politics playing out at the moment. They're talking about the wars and the geopolitics. So technically, that information is already priced into the market. So what we've really seen recently, as well as throughout, you know, a lot of history, is that it's sometimes less understood factors or really shock decisions that move the market sharply downwards. Now, you know, obviously, what those factors are and you know, when they'll impact, I don't know. However, it really wouldn't take a lot at the moment to cause a pullback in share prices. But as I said, you need to be positive in a rising market.
Okay, what about the Reserve Bank? Minutes out today from its last board meeting 2 weeks ago, they appear to imply further rate cuts to come, given they discussed the pace of easing and various scenarios of that pace of easing, right? How quickly is the market expecting rates to fall and why?
Yeah, so look, I don't think any surprises came out of the RBA minutes today. You know, they really, as you said, they expect future rate cuts, but the pace will really be determined by the data. So looking through the market at the moment, there's about a 30% chance of a rate cut at the next meeting at the end of September. But jumping forward to November, the following meeting after that, the market's pricing in about an 88% chance. So realistically, by the end of the year, there's, you know, at the moment, there'll be one, maybe two cuts. But look, it's difficult for the RBA because whilst the Australian government sets the policy, we're getting impacted at the moment by ongoings in the US, as well as other global, I guess, policy changes, which indirectly impact Australia. And hence, the RBA is being somewhat conservative and is waiting on the data before making any of those actual rate cut decisions.
Okay, reporting season continues. It was a huge one today. On the podcast, we spoke to the bosses of Coles, Fortescue, Tyro, but which were the ones that you focused on today?
Yeah, for us, we really focused on two. It would be more Fortescue and Coles. If we look at Fortescue, obviously the net profit after tax fell about 41%, you know, on a year of really challenging iron ore prices, as well as their write-off of about $158 million worth of, you know, their energy project. But however, I think, you know, it all leads into the fact that they did cut their dividend quite considerably, and most Australian investors really find that quite negative. And as a result, you know, they've pulled back in share price a little bit today. On the other hand, we've had Coles. They look to be jumping about the most in about the last 5 years on really solid earnings and a good trading result. The Coles share price has had a little bit of weakness over the past few months. So today's rally really just puts it back on track for the, you know, a good solid year of share price growth. So overall for Coles, it was a good result.
Given we're coming to the end of reporting season now, finally, what are the themes you've noticed coming out of reporting season so far?
So, yeah, we're in the last week of reporting season at the moment. If we look through some of the results of, across the whole market, about 50% of all companies, met expectations. On the other side, about 20% beat expectations and 30% missed. So, like any reporting season, there's mixed results. If we really had to pin it down, I think it's fair to say that the companies that had a miss or a beat were either punished quite harshly, and they saw significant price falls for a miss. And those that produced beats really got a share price kick, and we've seen that obviously with Coles today. So it's been a year in terms of reporting where results, good or bad, have impacted the share price considerably. If we look across the sectors, though, consumer discretionary were some very solid results and some good share price gains, as well as materials. But on the downside, really, healthcare was relatively weak. We still have a number of big companies report until the end of the week. So at this stage, look, it's looking like a relatively standard overall reporting season with, both winners and losers.
Finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, so at the moment, it's really important to be diversified in this market. The market has obviously been going up, so it's important, you want to be invested in this type of market. You don't want to sit on the sideline and miss some of the upside. So the only real, manageable factor in this is, your asset selection. And we think, even though the risks are there and the market's at all-time highs, you really need a diversified portfolio. And hopefully you can ride out any storms that might come in the future while picking up any of the upside in the interim.
It's Jamie Hanna there, the Deputy Head of Capital Markets and Investments at Van Eck. Now to our last interview of the day. It's been a long one. The CEO of Tyro Payments. Now, it's a takeover target. It posted a fall in full year after tax profit from $25.7 million to $17.8 million. To find out more, including how the consumer is feeling, Stephanie Youssef spoke with outgoing CEO John Davey.
So, John, let's talk about these results. Transaction volumes are marginally higher. Gross profit is up, but net profit fell about 30%. Are these numbers what you expected?
Yeah, look, we're really pleased with these results. I think if you look at EBITDA, we're up 10.6%. You mentioned gross profit being 4.4% up. Statutory profit did fall, but if you actually look at our FY24 results as well, that included about $9 million legal settlement, which is a one-off. So you exclude that, then overall we're really positive and we think it's a really strong result.
There's been a lot of data recently showing that consumer confidence is rebounding. Is that something that's reflective in your payments data? Are there any interesting trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, we're certainly starting to see some interesting trends, particularly in the fourth quarter of the last financial year and then the first couple of months of the new financial year of FY26. In particular, we're seeing some really positive signs in both what we think of as some of the more discretionary verticals that we support. That includes our hospitality customers and also retail customers. We're certainly not declaring sort of victory at this point in time, but those trends are positive and we're hopeful that they continue through for the remainder of the financial year.
Do you have any forecasts about how that might go? Do you think they'll just continue improving?
No, look, what we've tried to do is to build some of those forecasts into the guidance that we've provided for next year. As you probably saw, we've provided gross profit guidance of $230 million to $240 million, which from a compared to FY25 is about a 4.5% range at growth at the bottom end of the range and 9% at the top range. We believe that if we continue to see some of these positive trends, that we'll be closer towards the top end of guidance. But as I say, it's too early to call that just at this point in time.
Buy now, pay later platforms are growing. They make up about 2% of the US payments landscape, about 12 to 15% here in Australia, and up to 20% in some European countries. Are there any concerns about what the growth of those platforms could mean for your business?
Look, we continue to track various trends around payments, as you would or as you've indicated. Sort of the payments landscape is changing rapidly. From a strategic perspective, what we're trying to do is to make sure that we build solutions that really meet the needs of our merchants in industry-specific verticals. Buy now, pay later is certainly something that we're watching and that we watch with interest some of the changes and some of the growth. But there's also many other trends and changes that we're working on. So we continue to be able to learn and adapt as industry changes or as industry trends change.
You've recently confirmed that Tyro's attracted some takeover approaches, but they don't meet the company's intrinsic value. Can you elaborate on that? Do you mean like a monetary value, or are they like the values that align with your business?
No, look, it's from a monetary value perspective. I think that what we are, and we probably can't say a lot more than it's been disclosed to the market. We have received some interest that we've spoken about. When we look at the value of the business, there's obviously multiple ways that we look at the value, but the parties that have approached us have not put offers on the table that we consider represent fair financial or economic value.
At the time, investors responded well to that news. It saw shares surge when it was announced, and now they're responding to the results. I think the stock is currently about 3% down. Are you concerned by those fluctuations?
Are we concerned about them? Not really. If you actually have a look at our share price performance over the last couple of months, I think we've been sort of in the mid 70s to, yesterday we closed at $1.20. So we have seen a lot of variation and fluctuation in the Tyro share price over the last, well, over the last 3 years, really. We certainly are very interested and need to be able to stay aligned with what our shareholders want. But overall, we're pretty positive about this result, and the market will do what the market does and sort of assess it. But we think it's a pretty good result.
AI is a hot button topic. How is Tyro using or planning to use AI, both consumer facing and in your operations, and what does it mean for your workforce?
We're seeing some great opportunities for the use of AI. Firstly, from a productivity perspective. Secondly, in terms of customer experience, and thirdly, in terms of a new product innovation. We're using AI across each of those areas. In our customer support team, we're using it to be able to drive efficiencies and lower call durations. On our websites, we're using AI to be able to provide automated responses, and we're also using AI in our technology teams to be able to edit and create new code. From a team perspective, we're really using it to enable our team to be able to provide them with the tools that allow them to be more efficient in their roles and to be able to deliver better levels of customer service.
And you're leaving Tyro after several years at the helm. Firstly, congratulations. What's the biggest lesson you've learned as CEO?
Look, I've loved my time as CEO of Tyro. It's a great business. I'm really excited for the future. I think that the lesson that I've learned is keep it simple, focus on customers, and make sure that you deliver what you say you're going to deliver.
That's Stephanie Yusuf there speaking with the CEO of Tyro Payments, John Davey. And it wraps up this podcast for this Tuesday. It was a big one. Tomorrow is another big reporting day too. We've got the likes of Woolworths. We'll also speak with the CEO of Flight Centre, Graham Turner. And then the market will also be hit with official inflation numbers. So we will wrap all of that up tomorrow. See you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.